The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. In a few minutes, you'll hear my interview with Maisie Card at the Newark Public Library about poetry and spoken word workshops for underrepresented teens and emerging adults in that North Jersey city. But first, we go back to 1968. It was the year of assassinations, the year of Vietnam, the year of the Chicago riots, the year of the return of Richard Nixon. In essence, it was the year that changed America. The whole world is watching. The whole world is watching. That's the famous cry that came up from the streets of Chicago in 1968. 1968 is indeed a year that changed my life in many ways as a young person, and it was the year that changed America. That's the title of a lecture series, which also involved many other events, and it was underwritten in part by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, and my guest on the phone right now for this segment is Dr. John Pezda. Jack is the director of the Center at Camden County College, and I thank you very much for being here on the program.
Thank you for inviting me, Bob.
1968. Obviously, when people hear about it and they understand their American history, they think of the Tet Offensive, the election in Chicago, the riots in the streets of the convention, the new Nixon. But there's an awful lot more. And of course, naturally, we can't leave out the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. But beside those things, what in essence is the reason that 1968 was the year that changed America?
Well, for one reason, is it was time for the rise of this new feminism, and in addition to that, it was a time when people, for the first time, I think, in recent American history, began doubting their government and believing that their government was not telling them the truth. And, of course, the result of all this is the protest movement that you had referred to earlier. So a lack of faith in government, which is still a factor in our politics today.
But center to all of it, central to all of it, is the war in Vietnam and a change in reaction. And I was just a kid, but we had always been told, and I guess it had always been true, that America was on the right side and we were the good guys in any war we fought. Things started to change. We were also told that American military wins every war, which I guess also was true up until that point, other than the stalemate in Korea. And then came the Tet Offensive and the Battle at Hue. Talk a little bit about one of the lectures from former combat photographer John Olson, which was part of this.
One of the things about John Olson's talk was that, unlike the other speakers in the series, he's not an academic. He was a young combat photographer with the Marines at Hue. And when he told his story, he, of course, had the photographs to document it with. And so this is an eyewitness account of the battle and of the people that were involved in the battle. And he also later went on and he managed to interview about 11 of the Marines that he knew who are still alive.
And Hue was such an ugly battle because it was fought in a beautiful city and it was bloody hand-to-hand, block by block. And so that was very different. And Americans were seeing this on TV every night, too. And it seemed as if America had its first television war in Vietnam, didn't we?
It certainly did. Now, I do remember at the end of the Battle of Hue, a Marine officer was featured on CBS News. And they asked him, did we win? And he said, we're here and they're not. Well, he didn't understand that they didn't have to defeat us. They just had to keep fighting.
Right.
And that was something they realized at the very beginning of the war.
And keep us in the quagmire that we were in. But one of the issues about Vietnam that made 1968 so memorable was how it affected people here at home. And on last month's edition of Humanities Connection, this program, I was speaking with the NJCH executive director about this program coming up, and I told her, and I'll really edit it much tighter for this episode, but I was a freshman in high school, and one of our alums was a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he gave this very pro-Vietnam speech, and this was March of 1968, and everybody is up and cheering, and so many of my young teachers, many of them Catholic priests, got up and walked out on him, and I knew there were protests. I knew things were changing, but I never thought I'd see it right in my own high school gym. That's when it changed my life, and I knew it was changing America.
Well, I was a student at Kent State University, which a few years later, of course, would be national news because of the reaction of the Ohio National Guard to the Kent State student protest. But it's interesting you should mention that the priests and other clergy walked out, because one of our events in this series was a panel discussion of the Camden 28, an anti-war group that broke into the draft headquarters in Camden City in an effort to destroy the records and were arrested. What's interesting about it is the leader of that group was Father Michael Doyle, a Catholic priest, parish in Camden, who is still there and is still advocating many of the social causes he did in the 60s. During the course of that panel discussion, said that he, for moral reasons, he had to do it. And he convinced himself that even if he went to jail for a lengthy period of time, which was possible, it was worth it. He said he believed that it wasn't enough to just speak against the war. You had to act against the war. And the end result of that trial, in which there was no question that the group had broken in, that they had destroyed some records, is the jury found them not guilty, an example of jury nullification, which, as a matter of fact, then Supreme Court Justice Brennan said was one of the most important court cases of the 20th century.
And one of the things that's so important is, of course, that the Chicago riots, regardless of who gets blamed for them, because some people blame the police, some people blame the protesters, but regardless, it was a lot of bloodshed in a major American city on live television, thus the chant I began the segment with, the whole world is watching, the whole world is watching, because the baby boom generation knew the power of television and live TV in a way that their elders didn't. But that was about Vietnam, but it was also about the presidential election. And I understand that in the 1968, the Year That Changed America series, there was also a lecture presented about the very unique and interesting election for president that year between Richard Nixon and Hubert Humphrey.
There was, and the title of that was The End of Consensus, the 1968 Presidential Election and a Transformation of American Politics. And certainly American politics were transformed, in a sense that Richard Nixon, never a popular figure in American history or American government, ran on a campaign that he was going to end the war honorably in Vietnam, and he was going to bring all of us in the country together. Now, of course, while he was doing this, he introduced what came to be called the Southern Strategy, in which he, trying to win back what were Democratic states in the South, he appealed to the racist views that existed there at the time,
and
dramatically changed things.
And, of course, the South had been traditionally Democratic. Now the South is a very solid Republican. That is probably part of that transformation.
That is correct. And Lyndon Johnson, when he introduced the 1965 Civil Rights Acts, knew that they would result in the Democrats losing the South. And he said he will probably lose it for 25 years. Well, he was right about losing it, but not about the time frame, because it's of course, already much more than that.
Right. Let's talk just a little bit about the people, though, who I feel very sorry for, and those are the veterans of the Vietnam War. Because while consensus is now in our country that it was a mistake, and it is, you know, kind of a negative mark on our national reputation, the people who went and fought, the men and women who were in Vietnam for the U.S. military, felt they were doing their duty. And while you told me that stories of veterans being spat upon are apocryphal, there certainly were veterans who came home and were not thanked the way that today's veterans are justifiably thanked. And you had a veterans panel as part of 1968, the Year That Changed America. Talk a little bit about the, and I'll use the word plight, the plight of the Vietnam vet, because of the fact that they risked and often gave their life and limb, but yet were certainly not cheered by most people, or at least the majority of people at home.
Since you mentioned it, I should point out that the members of the panel were universally believed that they were doing the right thing, and they would do it again if necessary. But these were not the policymakers. They're soldiers and Marines and sailors who were doing what had to be done. following orders from their commanders. And those individuals are still very proud of their service. You know, and I did really notice resentment towards not being welcomed home. It may exist. It may have faded over time, but certainly you're correct that unlike World War II, there were no parades, and in fact, well, it couldn't have been because there was no victory parade as at the end of World War II. But I don't think they came away from that tainted or believing that they had been part of an immoral cause. They fought because they were ordered to fight, and that they were they would continue if necessary even to this day.
When you take a look at 1968 and the presidential campaign, it's very weird that it just happens by total coincidence that the class I teach in media and society at a university here in North Jersey today is dealing with the 1968, both the new Nixon and Chicago and the coverage of the Vietnam War. So a lot of these young people are seeing this for the very first time today, and they may not even realize that the society they live in America was really set up in 1968. Yes, there were other things that lasted from earlier periods, but 1968 made what you would consider to be the modern world.
It certainly did, because, well, for one thing, young people today are not surprised with individuals not believing in government, because that is their only experience. But in the early part of the Vietnam War, all of the polls showed that a substantial majority of the American people supported the war effort, largely because they believed that they were fighting against communism, they're fighting against the Soviet Union, and fighting against the People's Republic of China, when in fact they weren't. They were fighting against a nationalist group in Vietnam, and we seem to have missed that. But young people today, that doesn't seem strange to them. For me, it was a turning point in my life, and I'm sure other people of my generation, is that we tended to believe the government. The government always told the truth. We were always righteous, as you mentioned earlier, and we were fighting because we were trying to defend freedom. But all of that changed in 1968, particularly after the Tet Offensive. People lost faith in the generals who made the statement that it's just a matter of we could see the light at the end of the tunnel, suggesting that the war would soon be over and that we would be victorious.
And they said that the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong were incapable of launching such an offensive.
Right.
And then the main target ended up being the brand new U.S. Embassy in Saigon.
Correct. The fighting was actually, they never penetrated the building, but they penetrated the grounds. And when people saw that, they said, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. And then, of course, it wasn't just that battle, but battles all the way across Vietnam. Now, in that Tet Offensive, the Vietnamese, both North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, sustained a terrible military defeat. They lost an enormous number of people. But they weren't fighting to win the battle. They were fighting to prolong the war because they assumed that after time, the American people, seeing that no progress was being made, would abandon their support.
Jack, this program, Humanities Connection, is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Tell us about their role, and obviously there were many organizations putting this entire thing together, but talk about the role of the New Jersey Council for the Humanities.
The New Jersey Council for the Humanities have funded a number of programs at Camden County College, and one of the things that makes them very, very helpful is that when you apply for funding, they allow you to make a preliminary application, they review the application, and they suggest possible changes to improve the program. I found that to be invaluable. In addition to that, the open and welcoming attitude of people at the New Jersey Council certainly encourages you to pursue efforts of this sort.
When you talk about 1968 to young people, which actually, after we record this today, I will actually be doing, what are some of the key things that they really need to know? I mean, other than the litany of events that are so important, the RFK assassination, the MLK assassination, Vietnam, the new Nixon, the streets of Chicago, civil rights, feminism, etc. What is the key take home for young people for whom this is just ancient history?
The key item, I think, is this, that they have got to be, they've got to learn to look at actions of government critically and also to search for alternative opinions as far as government policies are concerned. Early in the Vietnam War, too often all of us just sort of accepted government statements about the war. But being critical of the government without necessarily abandoning government is vital. And it's not that we want to eliminate government. We just want to make it better. And an informed and critical thinking citizenry is the best way to do this.
And when you talk about the Camden 28, you made reference to them earlier. Sometimes you have to do things possibly beyond the boundaries of the letter of the law to stay within the spirit of the law. Not that we should be taking the law into our own hands, but there are a lot of decisions of conscience.
Absolutely, and certainly with those individuals who were a very diverse group of people instead of from all walks of life, that the morality of the issue is what motivated all of them, regardless of their particular backgrounds. But individuals being able to take a moral stand, it doesn't necessarily have to be something as drastic as what they did, but just writing letters, emails, questioning policymakers when they encounter them is so very, very important.
Jack, thank you very much. This meant a lot to me, and I hope the audience enjoyed it. 1968, the year that changed America. My guest, Dr. John Pezda.